Saul Bellow is perhaps the United States' most honored living writer, having received the Nobel, the Pulitzer, and 3 National Book Awards. Book critic Michiko Kakutani once described Bellow as creating characters who are caught in the middle of a spiritual crisis and frightened by the stubborn fact of death. Bellow was born in Montreal in 1915, but grew up in Chicago, where he lives today and where many of his novels are set. His books include The Adventures of Augie March, Seize the Day, Herzog, Humboldt's Gift, and Henderson the Rain King. I spoke with him last fall when his novella The Bella Rosa Connection was published. I asked him to elaborate on something he wrote in a 1987 essay. Bellow wrote, "As a Middle Westerner and son of immigrant parents, I recognized at an early age that I was called upon to decide for myself to what extent my Jewish origins, my surroundings, my schooling were to be allowed to determine the course of my life."
Well, I think that at a very early age, I think before puberty, I'd already decided that I wanted to be a writer, and this really drew me apart from my family.
Your father had been a businessman.
Well, my father had been the usual rabbinical student who came to America and found nothing better to do than business. And he didn't do it too well. He was not rigidly orthodox. I was not imposed on that way. I just wanted to go my own way. And I did.
You also said that you think you might have become a rabbi if the great world, the world of the streets, had not been so seductive. What was seductive? What did you see? And what do you mean by the world of the streets? What exactly were you exposed to?
I mean Chicago in the 20s. I mean the streets, street life, pool rooms, sports, a modicum of criminal activity, which was inescapable in Chicago during the 20s, the bang-bang time of Prohibition and so on, just the sense that you were participating in the life of this immense and expanding civilization, which was so fascinating that it drew me away from my Jewishness, not so as to make me forget it, but that I wanted to combine it with other things. I mean, I was deeply unwilling to follow anybody's blueprint from either side of the equation.
I've got to ask, you mentioned something about criminal activity. Were you involved in petty crimes yourself?
Well, every kid is involved in petty crimes, always a certain amount of theft and shoplifting and criminal intentions, which are much more powerful than the crimes you commit when you're a kid.
Were you ever caught for anything?
No. I wasn't. I was never interested in shoplifting at Woolworths and things like that people used to get caught at. But if I were working in a department store, as I once did, say at a barrel of surprise packages for Christmas, for a quarter apiece, my buddy and I, who were dressed as Santa Claus's helpers, would pocket an occasional quarter. Never got caught.
Mm-hmm.
But I never went in for big-time dishonesty.
Right. So when you were growing up, did you read a lot, too?
Yes, I did.
Did that let you in on other worlds outside Chicago?
Oh, immensely. That was really terrific. Of course, the first book I read was... the first books I read were the opening books of the Old Testament, which I read in Hebrew and translated into Yiddish, which made an enduring impression on me.
Pretty ambitious for starting out, huh?
Well, I think this is the way Jewish kids started out in traditional Orthodox families.
Now, you went to New York for the first time, I think when you were 17, you went to sell your first novel. I'm thinking of how much confidence you must have had in yourself to, at the age of 17, think that you had a chance of selling it to a publisher.
It wasn't I that went to New York at 17. It was my pal, Sidney Harris.
Oh, I thought you went with him.
No, I didn't go with him.
Oh.
No, I had to stay at home and face the music.
Which was what?
Which was that I had conspired with him to run away to New York. He had written a novel. We were both schoolboys, high school boys. I wrote the introduction to the novel, which was nearly as long, I think. Then we tossed a coin to see who would take it to New York to be published. He won the toss. So without a moment's hesitation, he just He tucked the manuscript under his sweater and he took off. I had to answer to his mother.
What'd you tell her?
He was an only child. I wouldn't tell her anything, of course, because that would be squealing. Though I was a literary type, I was also brought up in Chicago, and I knew how bad it was to squeal. So I kept my mouth shut. And his mother, who was an English woman, Cockney lady, and my eldest brother, who was in the habit of policing me, took me down to the Missing Persons Bureau. We went downtown on the streetcar, and I was confronted by the cops in the Missing Persons Bureau. "Where is Sidney J. Harris?" I wouldn't talk. That was bad, but my brother, when he got home, broke into the only private lock drawer I ever had in boyhood, and he found letters that Sidney had been sending me, and so the game was up.
So what was the outcome of the book?
Well, he went to an old Chicago bookseller who had set up in New York in the early 30s as an independent publisher. His name was Pat Cavici. And Pat was very impressed with his gifts and offered him an advance to do another book, not this one, which I have to admit was not much good, neither his book nor my introduction, announcing him as great genius, coming genius, and denouncing bourgeois America and so on. We were 16 at the time.
So what did get you to New York? And you lived in New York through part of the 40s through the 60s, is that right?
Well, that's where New York was where the action was. And if you were interested in the literary life, you couldn't stay in Chicago anymore because the great literary days of Chicago were definitely finished by the middle of the Depression years. And anybody who was somebody had already gone off. So I went to New York. I hitchhiked to New York a few times to start a literary career. And somehow I did.
In your book, Humboldt's Gift, you refer to, quote, the fastidious goy critics on guard for the Protestant establishment and the genteel tradition. Now, you were really one of the first of the modern Jewish novelists to really make it and reach a wide audience in America. Did you ever feel when you were starting out that you were up against a non-Jewish establishment who might keep you out?
Well, it always helps a young writer to be a belligerent. Militancy is what he chugs along on. So you have to discount. You have to enter a discount for some of this. It's true that we had the experience of first of being locked out, and then of being admitted partly as under the aspect of curiosity, you know. I mean, as Samuel Johnson said about lady poets, they're like dogs that walk on their hind legs. The miracle, what is interesting is not that they do it badly, but that they can do it at all. And I think that this was the category I felt myself being thrust in, and I didn't really like it very much.
What gave you that feeling?
I was battlesome. Well, you know, we had no sooner arrived and begun publishing books, people like Malamud and I, and later on Roth, than we were tagged as Jewish writers. Nobody wants to be tagged in that way. I mean, we thought of ourselves as belonging to the mainstream. We were Americans of Jewish origin. That didn't mean that we had to be tagged that way. And I, for one, really didn't like it. And I jokingly named Roth, Malamud, and myself as the Hartshaffner and Marx of American literature. But that stuck, rather. I mean, the idea that that you were not a full partner in this enterprise.
In 1975, in a piece in Newsweek, you expressed your fear of being elevated to grand old man status, and you said that that's a way of just being eased out. I was wondering if you still are concerned about that, and if you feel you've tried to.
I'm not concerned about it at all. I just don't do it.
Don't do what? What would be required of you?
In my time, I've watched writers and poets mm-hmm. Playing this role, and I just don't care for it.
What's the role specifically that you're talking about?
Oh, the sort of Robert Frost grand old man role. You know. I am now the spokesman of my generation, or I am the spokesman for America. And so I've never considered myself that kind of spokesman.
So are there things that you turn down because you don't want to play that role? Certain speaking invitations or certain things that you are asked to write? Certain stands you are expected to take?
Well, I turn down invitations because I don't want to waste my time. That is to say, if I didn't have anything better to do, I might accept them and go forth and glitter as a public figure. But since I'm too busy, I turn them aside for the most part.
Novelist Saul Bellow, this is Fresh Air.